I'm just so you know, I'm nervous. I'm about to jump out of my skin. Kind of nervous because I just don't do this. I'm not a professional speaker and I don't do this all the time. I think getting started is probably the hardest part. It's kind of like going to the gym or something. You know, if you can think about it all day long and not get anywhere, getting your clothes on and getting out the door, then everything is okay. So let me do a couple things. You know, one of the things is, I don't know if you guys, how many of you have iPhones? But I didn't upgrade last night. Technology is just crazy. You know, I go to grab my phone this morning. It's completely different. It's like I got a whole new phone. I don't even know what to do with it anymore. The stopwatch is completely different. So, you know, I was asked to do a joke. And I'm not a guy that remembers jokes. I never can remember a joke. And there's lots of you. It's like my father-in-law. He can just tell you joke after joke after joke. And my wife's grandfather, 90 years old, he can just tell you, he's got the book of jokes on his, just in his memory. But I can never remember a joke. So I was asking my wife, and just, you know, there's a few that I've gotten. So I told her one. She says, "Well, Audie, you got to say this." So I told her I would. So there's two fish in a tank. One turns to the other, says, "Who's going to drive this thing?" So that's my joke. By the way, if any of you have knives, I want you to put your knives, kind of like hide your knives. I don't want any food thrown up here or anything like that. So, you know, there's a lady. Have any of you heard this joke about the lady on the bus? Okay. There's a lady. She gets on the bus. She's got a baby. So she passes by the driver, and the driver goes, "Ah!" And he says, "Man, that's the ugliest baby that I've ever seen." She storms back to the back of the bus. She sits down by a guy and tells the guy, "That guy just insulted me." And he says, "Ma'am, you need to go on up there and tell him, you know, tell him off. Go on now, I'll hold your monkey." So, you know, I was out playing golf. I like golf, and I've played golf with quite a few of these guys, and there's some pros in the room, and they know me, I'm not a pro. So I struggle at the game, but I love it to death. One of my friends, we're out playing, and I thought this was really would apply to this this luncheon, but we were out playing golf, and one of my buddies, he's real dissatisfied with his work. He's a territory manager for a manufacturer, and he's just always complaining about his work, his pay, works more, and he just never has margin. He's always traveling, and you know, he's not getting paid what he's worth. Taxes and everything. He says, "You know, golf is a lot like taxes. You work hard to get to the green, then you wind up in the hole." So I said, "You know, that's a lot like my life. You know, I work hard. I worked hard to get to the green, then I wind up in the hole." So again, my name is Audie Brower. I was born in Tampa, Florida, 1 week after my mother came from Cuba. My dad had met my mom in Cuba. He was fighting in a rebel army against Fidel Castro and Batista at the time. We lived, grew up in a little town 11 miles east of Tampa called Mango, Florida. It was so small, there wasn't anybody there. I mean, I remember our neighbors. That's who my parents kind of associated with, because there wasn't anybody else. There was a little elementary school close by. There was a convenience store, lots of orange groves and fields, a few other neighbors. I don't even know if they were abandoned homes or not, but it wasn't a very big house at all, and very big city. And you know, it's like I'm a deer in headlights. You just forget all this stuff as you're going. And this is my life. But So we grew up in this little town. My mom, she would take us to church. My dad really didn't. I've got two older sisters. One had passed away. I've got an older brother. He's here today. I'm not going to tell you who he is because then I don't want to embarrass him. But my sisters were married when I was 8 years old. My brother and I, we pretty much were the ones that grew up together. When I was 9 years old, my mother and father decided to move to Texas. My aunt and my cousins lived in Texas, in College Station, and they wanted to be closer to them, so we're off to Texas. When I get to Texas, I'm a little guy. I mean, I just felt like I was small. And coming from the country, I was just very intimidated by the city kids. They're saying, hey, College Station isn't that big. Just think of, I was driving in this morning, and Houston has gotten tremendously huge in the past 5 years. But so it's kind of like the same experience. It's kind of experiencing that driving in. But I asked my parents if I could take karate. So they agreed. So I got into karate and taekwondo at an early age and ended up getting my black belt at 15. I met a guy when I was about 16, and we started stealing stuff. We started stealing radar detectors and CB radios, and we'd go out at night and we'd take tires off of trucks. Put them either on our trucks or our vehicles or sell them. Those easy money. Needless to say, that lasted about a year. We ended up getting caught. So to avoid a felony charge, I was able to join the Marine Corps. Marine Corps would have it. So I joined the Marine Corps. I graduated high school, and immediately after high school, I went directly into the Marine Corps. In the Marine Corps at boot camp, I broke the Marine Corps sit-up record and was a platoon leader, got meritoriously promoted out of boot camp, and got stationed at Camp Pendleton. Soon after Camp Pendleton, about 6 months later, stupid me, I'm drinking beer at a Pizza Hut, or Pizza, I don't remember if it's a Shakey's or Pizza Hut or Pizza Inn, but I was drinking with a buddy, and we had a little bit too much to drink, and he dares me to leave. I take him up at his dare, and we end up going back to the barracks, packing our duffel bags, throwing the stuff out the windows, putting it in my car, and we take off. I'm done with the Marine Corps. So I get back. I drop him off in San Antonio because that's where he lived. I get home, I tell my dad what was going on, I wasn't going back. He didn't believe me. He thought I was on leave. He thought I was just kidding. And I wasn't kidding at all. And about 30 days later, our commanding officer ended up calling him. We have a little talk. I decide to go back to Camp Pendleton, and they court-martial me. I get busted. And they sent me to Okinawa, Japan. So in Okinawa, I don't know if you guys have been in the military or not, but Okinawa is not it's a small island. It's kind of like a pit, armpit. And if you do good, you're always in operations. You're always on training exercises. You're traveling in Philippines, Korea, mainland Japan. So I didn't want to stay on Okinawa. So I end up becoming Joe Marine. I revert back to exercising. I pour everything into the Marine Corps and become Joe Marine. I get meritoriously promoted 3 times to corporal. I'm doing so well, they want to ship me to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, to Schools Battalion. And so I go there. There, I meet another guy. I'm doing really good. Now I've got a girlfriend. Always I'm enjoying the Marine Corps because it's just constantly playing war, going out, 3-4 days a week in in the field. Meet a guy. He worked out. He lifted weights. And he happened to be an office boat. He wrote the payroll checks for at least our company. He tells me, he says, "Arnie, we can fake your marriage. You can get double the money. You're always gone. You can just bank that." That was a great idea. You know, that's easy money. I'm not, you know, I get, you know, base housing and all that. I just put the money in the bank. I'm going to get what I can out of the Marine Corps. So I'm on a training exercise, happened to be cold weather training. My girlfriend happened to be the daughter of the sergeant major of the Marine Division that I was stationed at. Well, comes tax time comes rolling around. I never thought of this, okay? This is not thinking ahead at all. So I have to get the check, and it wasn't like today. You can do electronic filing, you got internet and all this. You got snail mail. So as you're traveling and you're going to different places for training exercises and operations, mail just follows you. So I told my girlfriend at the time that let's have the check sent to her mailbox, and we'll split the cash. She was all good with that. So that's what we do. She got sick. Her mom checks the mail. I didn't know any of this. I get invited over for dinner. My brother doesn't even know this, but I get invited over for dinner, and it's like one of these Twilight Zone moments. Everybody, you know, all her sisters and her brother, and it's a Marine Corps family. He's Sergeant Major of our division. He's just, everybody's just major, kind of like one of these shows, you know, he's very right on Marine. And everybody kind of vanishes from the table, and he said, "Audie," he says, "why didn't you tell me you married my daughter?" I said, "Sir, we're not married." He throws this letter down at the end of the table, and he says, "You damn well better be." I get the letter. It's a letter from the IRS. It's what I was expecting my girlfriend to pick up. Her name, my name, my last name. Man, talk about a heart-sinking moment. And I knew I was in trouble. I knew at that moment it was prison time. I mean, never, you know, I've been busted. But he cared enough. He thought that he cared so much about me. He gave me an option to marry his daughter or go to Leavenworth. So I went to Leavenworth. No, just that was an easy decision. So I married his daughter. Wasn't about to stay in the Marine Corps at the time. So I get out. I start selling computers, so I got an honorable discharge. And I'm going to flip some pages here because I'm not going through all this. But I get out of the Marine Corps in 83. I start selling computers because in 83, computers were, it was ground floor opportunity. And I knew deep down inside, I mean, I was looking at magazines, Soldier, Fortune magazines, you know, wanting to be a mercenary because I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I just didn't know anything else to do. And I knew deep down inside, I didn't want to go in, I didn't want to kill people. That's not something I wanted to do for a living. So computers was ground floor opportunity. It was like Apple and IBM at the time. It wasn't everything else. So I start selling Apple computers. Do real well at that. A guy recruits me into a multi-level marketing organization. They were the top, fastest growing company, I think, at least in the country, could have been in the world at the time, a nutritional product company. And what our strategy was is to bring investors in at the highest level. And because in multi-level marketing, the faster the success, the bigger the splash, the more success you're going to have, the more followers, the more people. Nobody wants to get into multi-level marketing. You see all these things. Oh, man, you can make $800 a month. It takes you 2 years to get there. Who's interested? Nobody. You know, nobody wants to work for 2 years working, you know, going every night to one of these meetings or on weekends to make an extra $800 a month or $300 a month. But if you can show them how to make $24,000 or $30,000 a month within 6 months, I think you'd be interested, right? So we're bringing in investors. We would fly them, and we'd run major investment ads into major cities. We'd fly people in, had this really plush office. We would pick them up. We'd bring them in. We do our presentation and bring them in as an investor, show them how to do the same thing, work their center of influence, who do they know, and we'd continue to do this. Needless to say, within 6 months, I'm the top six distributor nationally for the company. So I'm flying to Century City, California, picking up royalty override checks for $24,000 to $30,000. So people are interested. They're saying, man, if that guy can do it, I can do it. So it was easy. Well, someone dies in Boca Raton. Lady dies on one of the products. And we continue to pour money into, you know, multi-level marketings at night, on weekends. When you're dealing with, it's fast-paced. We're flying to these different organizations in different cities. It's a fast-paced life. I'm still married at the time, but have no relationship. Get involved into doing drugs and alcohol at these parties. And soon, we're divorced. Not only that, the lady dies in Boca Raton. Now, business, I can't get anybody. We can't. We're still flying. We're still doing everything that we've been doing, but we can't get anybody to invest anymore. So we start tumbling and cratering down. I'm 24 years old. You think that you're invincible at the time, making that kind of money and stuff. At least I did. So I retreat. Kind of like I did in Marine, I retreat to working out. I go back to working out and karate and cycling and doing stuff that kind of gives me stress relief. I had a condo in Coral Springs, Florida, and a townhouse in College Station. End up selling both of those. And here it is. I end up getting married again. I start a network integration company. My wife and I, we have a son. And I start pouring myself into the business and trying to have a successful business. Those of you who have business, it takes a lot of effort to make a business run. So I sacrificed my time with my family, thinking that I needed to provide for them, that if anyone was going to do it, it was going to be me. I end up 4 years, so I got divorced 4 years later. Now I'm in an empty house, but now I'm in an empty house. My son's gone. He's a little over 3 years old now, and I'm hurt. I'm at the bottom. Just every decision that I tried to run a business, tried to be successful in the business, tried the multi-level marketing thing. We were doing real good. It cratered. Just every decision that I'm making is just not working out for me. And it's just one decision after another. It's just bad. So every 4 years, I seemed like I was making a catastrophic decision in my life that was life-changing. It was hurting others. It was hurting, you know, everybody around me, my family. It was killing me. Now I've drug a son, you know, my son into this. So yeah, I was hurting. I felt at that time that when I mentioned every four years, so I had to go into Marine Corps. As I told you, I ended up getting out because I had to get married. It was another stupid mistake. Because of business and everything, I ended up getting a divorce, then remarried and now separated. So that's like 16 years of my life that's just passing by. I just couldn't take it anymore. So I heard my mom's voice. You know, when I was young, I was raised to go to church. My mom said I was baptized at 8 when I was 8 years old. I don't remember that at all, what really transpired through all that. I remember, you know, I can look back and I can remember going to like a Sunday school class or something. But man, I was just running my own deal. You know, I was raised to know that, you know, there was a God. And he had a son, and his son's name was Jesus Christ. And that God sent his only son here to walk this earth in flesh. He was perfect. He died for our sins, that we would be forgiven. God accepted his sacrifice and raised him from the dead, saying that he was an acceptable sacrifice for us. Man, I knew all that. But what was that going to do for me? You know, that's why I always did the things in my life the way I did them. I mean, because, you know, Jesus and all that religion stuff just wasn't something that was going to work for me. My mom would always say, "Boy, you need to follow the Lord. Boy, you need to follow the Lord." And it's like, what do I need to follow the Lord for? Well, obviously, my life is not going so good, and I'm at the bottom, you know, at the bottom of the bottom. And I was tired of all this hurt and pain. And sitting in my house all alone, I went to my knees and I said, "Lord, come into my life. I don't want to keep hurting people. The people that loved me, the people that were around me, now I'm hurting my son. Change me. Make a change in me." Man, I want to tell you, when I did that, I accepted the Lord, that I had this great, saw this great light. Man, I was just perfectly changed at that time. It didn't happen. I did feel a sense of peace, but I knew that I needed to take a step. So I started to pick up a Bible. And I was even though I had been brought up in the church, I picked up the Bible and I thought it was just like every other book. It's a storybook. So I start reading from front to back. And so I just start reading at the front. So next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to join a local church. I want to surround myself. I want to change. So I join a local church. I pick a large church because I figured that the pastor would have to be good if that many people were there. So I go to this church. Well, I walk in the sanctuary, and the sanctuary is just huge. So where I go to the very top. Man, I want to be away from everybody. So I go up and sit by myself. Man, God's timing is so perfect. The pastor his sermon was on exactly what I had been reading. And I felt like, wow, God, you're making yourself known to me. You're making this real. I just felt the presence. Not only that, a guy comes and sits down right beside me. Now I'm up in the nosebleed section because I don't want to be next to anybody. I'm just trying to figure things out a little bit at a time. A guy comes and sits down beside me. Of course, we're in church, so we don't just start talking. But after the sermon, he asked me some questions. I kind of tell him a little bit about what's going on. He invites me over to lunch. I go and meet his wife and him, and he happens to be going to a Bible study called Bible Study Fellowship. So Bible Study Fellowship at the time was a four-year study of the Bible. And he encouraged me to get involved because I'm trying to learn a little bit about the Bible. So I start learning a little bit about it, and I tell him, yeah, you know, that's exactly what I want to do. So the following week, I go back to church. In the lobby, I'm leaving after church, and in the lobby, I see my now separated wife, and I told her that I wanted her forgiveness, and that I wanted to try to work things out, and I wanted her and my son to come back, and just asked if I could, you know, cook them a meal and start over. She accepted. I told, you know, when they came over, I kind of was telling her some of this experience, and she knew the real me. She knew that that I wasn't such a good guy. She thought that that this was all, you know, you just try to do something to get your, you know, to get the wife back. You say pretty much anything, and she felt like that. And so she always tested our relationship, and I still continued to pour myself into to the business. But we did. We worked it out. We continued to get back together. We got back together. We had a daughter, my daughter, and she always tested that relationship just to see where it was going. And I wasn't completely changed. I mean, I was still, I had a lot of bad habits. I mean, I spent all my life doing wrong things, and those things would come up, and I had sought after success and material things, and when things weren't going my way, I would have anger, and she saw all that. And one day I told her that I didn't love her. And what I really meant to say is that I didn't like the way she was treating me. And but the words were spoken. You know, in today's world, it's like, I don't love you. It's okay. Well, we fell out of love with each other. It's over. So there's some things that went on, and we end up inviting her parents over for some counseling. Her parents recommended that we separate, you know, for a short period and try to work on a relationship. So I end up going to my brother's, thinking that, you know, I'm not going to just go and get an apartment or a house or anything. I'm just going to go, we're going to work on this relationship, so it's going to be short-term. And it was short-term. She ends up filing for divorce. That hurt. So now I accepted Christ in my life. I had tried to change my life, and things still just aren't working the way that I want them to work. So I continue to pour myself into business and working out. I surround myself with a group of men, and a group of men, you know, are like Christian businessmen. This is a group, a lot of the guys that invited you here today. I thought maybe, you know, one other step would be, you know, if I ran my business in a biblical way. So I'm going to have a group of men that run businesses too, and we'll consult with one another and run biblical business, you know, and really what for success, for money. At the time, even though I had this group of men around me and I'm trying to improve my life, I still decide to make choices on my own. So in a business relationship, I meet a woman, and I thought God had delivered the perfect woman for my dreams. Now, he'd got me out of he's cleaning up my life. This is deception. He's cleaning up my life, got rid of this old relationship, but he's brought this new woman into my life. She's, you know, she's gorgeous, she's athletic, she's well-educated, makes a lot of money, and takes care of her kids. Looking at all the wrong attributes and characteristics. I don't bring this up to my Christian friends because I don't want to hear what they've got to say, you know, because I think this is a God thing, you know. So I don't bring it up to them. Next thing you know, they know that I'm getting married. So it kind of blindsided them. Well, I continue to pour myself into the business, and still continue to meet with these men. They love me even though they see the things that I'm doing. It lasts about 3.5 years. But see, I was going through a time in my life now that my kids, I had two kids, and I would go and pick them up and drag them to my house, and now I've got this blended family thing going on. My kids didn't want to spend time with me because they didn't want to drive an hour to the house and then come back another hour. Didn't want to just, you know, come over on the weekends. They didn't like the whole blended family thing, so they wouldn't want to come over. That hurt my feelings. I thought that they didn't love me. Of course, I would go back home to my wife then, and I'd explain this stuff. She didn't think that that she loved me, or that I felt like they loved me enough, because it wasn't good enough. You know, I was still hurting. So she falls for divorce and says it's not good for her and her kids. So even though there's a verse that's stuck in my mind, because I'm trying to grow in the Lord, and the Lord's bringing me up a little bit at a time, and a verse that I remember clear as day at the time was, who can walk on hot coals and not get burned? And I thought about that. And I've got a group of men around me, I'm surrounding myself, but I'm not trusting, and I'm not willing to lay my life before them to see, you know, what counsel would they give me, and was I willing to follow and trust in the Lord to provide that counsel to me? I just wasn't at that point yet. And I remember feeling so hurt, and I'm really putting myself out here because a lot of these guys are here today, you know. I didn't want to hurt them anymore. So I was continuing to hurt people. I'm still hurting people. I'm hurting this group of men by not being open to them. And I'm trying to be, you know, a Christian. I'm trying to change my life still. So I felt the conviction. You know, there's another verse. You know, trust the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He'll set your path straight. I developed a conviction that, man, I needed to really continue to make a change, and I wanted to trust. I wanted to be open. I was willing to lay myself out. Any decision that I need to pour it out there. And if they said that it wasn't right, or they felt, you know, biblically it wasn't right, I was willing to accept that counsel and look and see what God wanted, because I wanted the very best. I'm still tired of living the way I'm living. So I took some counsel. I worked on my relationships. I started meeting with some other men at the time and started trying to improve the margin in my time. Because I was still being controlled by my business, and it just weighed a lot on me. And I wanted to have more time in my life. I wanted to be able to, when I say margin, more things, I wanted to be able to do the things that I wanted to do. I wanted to spend time with men and help them through some of the struggles that I was going through, because, man, that's my testimony. Decisions comes up to, you know, should I start a new business? What should I be doing? And where do I want to spend eternally? And I wanted to spend my time mentoring, helping men grow in Christ. But I was counseled. I ended up taking a job as a in sales. I was still lonely. Found a, you know, woman. Stayed pure in a relationship. She respected that I was wanting to keep a pure relationship. And then you know, even though we didn't have sex or anything, you know, she just accepted me, and we grew in a friendship together. And through that friendship, we didn't want to separate. We just decided we were going to get married. So she had a couple of kids, and what I tried so hard to do, you know, I failed at, and God provided. This was a lady that had a heart after God. That's my wife and her kids. They love me. Now I've got four grandkids. An opportunity comes up. in my career, I was really scared because I had come from computers and technology and going into home improvement. Whoa, what a scare that was. I remember having, I thought that I was going backwards in life because, man, I owned my own business. I used to be in a suit and a desk and air conditioned. Now I'm meeting with a group of contractors that couldn't speak English and just, I just thought I was going backwards, but I trusted in the Lord, and I'd stepped out, and He has provided. An opportunity came up in Austin to take over a territory, and that was another moment I trusted in the Lord. And I remember Him saying that, if I ask you to move, would you not move? Because I started getting real comfortable. And I asked my wife, and she says, if the Lord leads you to do that, let's do it. So I met a guy in Austin for counsel. And he happened to be a guy that I'd met with probably 10, 12 years prior in a little Bible study group. And he had moved to Austin to work on a ministry there. And he said, Audie, I've been praying for someone to come alongside me. And I felt, man, this is where I need to be. So we end up moving to Austin. Things had gone really great, and continue. We just bought a house on the lake with 2.5 acres, and hoping that that would be a family retreat. My wife, I continue to stay as busy as I want to be in home improvements. I have now built a ministry of men there, and it continues to grow. And we're doing exactly the same thing, investing in others' lives and helping them grow in Christ. So my wife and I continue to grow in Christ together as well. We now, grow our grandkids and try to instill those values into them. So need to wrap up here. So just in wrapping up, I just want to feel led to say a couple of things. That through this whole thing, man, I am I'm a sinner, and I fall short of God's glory. The wages of my sin is death. That's the death that I had. It was total chaos. The free gift of God is eternal life, and that's in His Son. I'm thankful to God for His forgiveness in accepting me the way I was and the way I am now. There is a God. So if there's any doubt, man, there is a God. And He did send His Son, Jesus, who died for me. He was an acceptable sacrifice by God and was raised from the dead and is still alive in the Spirit. When I asked Him for His forgiveness of my sin and to come into my life, He began His work in me. He gives me conviction of sin and the power to overcome it so that I can have peace and joy in my life and that chaos be completely removed. See, I always knew Jesus Christ, and I knew about God, but they weren't any part of my life. I didn't truly accept Him. And there's a difference between knowledge and just knowing who He is versus accepting Him and letting Him come in and change you. So, He says that He keeps in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast on Him because we trust in Him. That's the truth. Come to me, all who are burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take, for I am gentle and humble, and thank you so much for letting me spill out about a little bit about my life. If there's anything, get with whoever brought you here. I'm going to turn this over to Ramsey and get out of here.